This is Real Estate Journeys, episode 107.
As a new investor, you don't have to be out there doing like hundreds of deals, right? If you have a strong system and strategy, you can just buy single family homes, rent out per bedroom, and double your rental profit. From this, I reinvested the cash flow. I even took out some equity from my first property to put on my fourth property. I was able to buy it sooner. And just by doing that, I was able to scale the four properties within 4 years. So even as a new investor, you don't have to be doing so many deals. You can just focus on getting started in single family investing.
Welcome to Real Estate Journeys, here to help you build your cash-flowing real estate empire that you've been dreaming of. This is about real estate investors who have escaped the soul-crushing 9-to-5 rat race by taking action, leveraging relationships, and gaining the financial independence. It's time to stop making excuses and get the insight and knowledge you need to become a successful real estate investor. This is your host, Matthew Baltzell.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, aka Matthew Baltzell. Welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for real estate investors looking to scale to 100 units and live that location independent lifestyle. And on today's episode, guys, I'm really excited because it's kind of like a up and coming guy. He's a really cool guy. And I know a lot of us, you know, with prices are increasing in asset values and people want to start getting into single family homes and they don't know if they're going to be able to do it or how are they going about getting into real estate. So today's guest, his name is Ryan Chow. He has a very good, interesting story. He has, I believe, currently 4 single family homes. He's not netted, but they are basically grossing around $1,100 and he plans on retiring by the age of 31. With that said, let's jump into it. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Matthew? Thanks for inviting me on the show. Actually, it's $11,000 a month about.
What did I say?
$1,100.
Oh, sorry. $11,000. Yeah, so it's 7 a.m. my time. Four or five p.m. your time.
5 p.m. my time.
Yeah, there we go. So you're a little more fresh than I am, so I do apologize. So
oh, for the yeah, all good.
Yeah. For the people that are listening
cool
to
Zoom
this.
Allows us to basically connect from anywhere at any time. So
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, likewise. So, you know, I touched on it briefly that you had 4 single family units. Could you give us a little bit of a, you know, background? How did you go about acquiring that first property?
Yeah, so let me start from the beginning. I was inspired by my grandpa. He owned around 3 properties in the San Francisco Bay Area. And from that rental income, he was able to retire early and basically have that rental income pay for all of his expenses until a ripe old age of 93 and a half. So yeah, I mean, I was inspired by this to get started in real estate because I realized that it's probably the best way to create generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started getting into real estate from after I graduated in 2015. I graduated with a pharmacy degree, and then I just wanted to get started right away. So I worked a lot of overtime. I worked probably 6 or 7 days a lot of the weeks. And then I sometimes put in like 14-hour days, all to save up a down payment because, you know, California is a little bit more of an expensive market. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get started as soon as possible. So in 2016, I bought my first single family home. It was in Stockton, California. I actually live in Sacramento, California, but I invested in Stockton because the cash flow makes a lot more sense there. And then what I did was I actually rented out per bedroom to maximize my profit. I'm basically doubling the expected profit that I would be getting by renting out per bedroom rather than renting out as a whole house. And I put in like maybe 4 or 5 students in each single family home I buy. And then I was able to eventually scale it to have 4 single family homes, 18 tenants that pays me $10,755 per month in rental income. So it's really gone pretty far in such a short amount of time because I used this investing strategy of investing in my local college town.
Love it. So what were you looking for as far as like investment criteria when you're looking for these single family homes? Are you looking for 5 units or the hidden den or, you know, within a quarter of a mile of the campus? Like what were you looking for?
Yeah, exactly. So I look for cookie cutter properties like 3 bed, 2 baths, where I can, like you said, find a hidden den or find a hidden 4th or 5th bedroom where I can. So usually if I can turn like an extra family room or extra den into a bedroom, that's probably ideal. Sometimes I'll just put up some drywall to create that extra bedroom. And that really maximizes the profit because every single room I can add, it adds around $620 in rental income. So imagine a 3-bed will make around maybe $2,000 a month or less. Mm-hmm. But if I add that, 4th bedroom, it would add another $600 to my profit. So I'll be making around $2,600 or $2,700 per month. And if I could add the 5th bedroom, which I did for my 4th property, I was able to make $3,100 per month in rental income. So it really it scales fast if you can add those extra bedrooms. That makes a huge difference.
For sure. So you said that your grandfather, he inspired you. You know, you're going to school and, you know, you realize you want financial freedom, you want to retire possibly early. How'd you go about educating yourself? Did your grandfather mentor you or did you start reading books or were you going to meetups or what was your education process like?
Yeah. So unfortunately, my grandpa passed away before I mm-hmm. started getting into investing in real estate. And yep. I didn't have a chance to ask him how he did it exactly. So I kind of was on my own, to be honest. I also saw that my friend basically house hacked when he was in college. He would stay in one of the bedrooms and rent out the other bedrooms. And so basically he was living for free throughout college. This kind of gave me the idea to copy his model, right? And mm-hmm. just do this, but on a larger scale. And so I guess I just kind of got started. I bought my first property for $262,000 in Stockton. And this house had all sorts of problems. I could tell you so many issues with it. There's like my sewage story, I guess I can talk about. So the sewage story, basically what happened is about a couple months after I bought the property, I get a call in the middle of the night from a tenant saying, "Hey, dude, there's sewage coming out of the kitchen sink. It's all over the kitchen floor. It's a huge mess." And this is at like 11 p.m. at night, right? So I'm like frantically calling out a plumber, trying to get someone to come over, and no one's picking up. That's a big problem, right? I finally found someone to sanitize the whole area. And once they stuck a camera down the pipe, they found that the whole sewage line was basically broken. It was cast iron pipe, so it rusted over. There are roots sticking into it. So I had to replace the whole line. Cost me around $6,000, $7,000 just to replace the line. And on top of that, I also had to pay, of course, for the sanitation. It gets kind of complicated by putting a sump pump to pump out the sewage from the basement. Ugh. And so, yeah, all in all, it probably cost me like $10,000 or so to make all those repairs. So I was like, at this point, you know, my mindset was in shambles. I was like, oh man, is this really going to work? You know, am I going to be able to scale this as much as I thought? I also had a vacancy for 8 months. And so that's like $600 per month lost in rental income. That's about $5,000 total lost in rental income. So I actually did make a lot of mistakes at the beginning, but I learned from those mistakes. And it was great that I kind of made them because I was able to improve my model, realize what I'm looking for really in a house, and look for red flags when I'm looking at property. So now I kind of have this system in place where I just copy the same system over and over, and I scale to 4 houses, right? And then made that 6-figure income in passive income.
That's great. So somebody's listening to this and they're thinking about, you know, possibly going your route. What red flags should they be looking for?
Yeah. So first, what I would say is don't buy a property that's too old. The first property I bought was over 100 years old. So that kind of, you know, of course, created that sewage issue. The pipes were very old. Another thing you want to look at is like how many trees are around the area. I try to take out trees where I can, because like large trees are overhanging the roof. They clog your gutters. They dig into the pipelines, right? So I try to avoid properties with large trees like that. There's also the neighborhood. Location is very important. I try to buy near the school as close as I can. Of course, another thing to consider is maybe buying near a hospital if you wanted to look for, you know, a high quality tenants. Because if you buy into a neighborhood that's, you know, run down, there's a lot of homeless people nearby, right? It's going to be hard to find high quality tenants to rent out your house to, because you know, maybe someone who's a doctor, a medical resident, you're trying to rent the place out to, they're not going to be looking for a place that's run down and there's, you know, a lot of trash on the road and all that. So location is very important as well.
For sure. So from here, you said you're going to be scaling this even further, or you're going to just pay these off and then retire when you're 31?
That's a great question. So my goal eventually is to have 7 houses. You know, I didn't set it a particular age or when I reached that goal, but it's kind of like how Bruce Lee says, be like water, meaning you should be malleable and flexible. So I do have this plan to pay them off by the time I hit 31, which I'm totally on track to do, but I'm always open to, of course, pivot. If like the market tanks, for example, I'll be buying houses up like crazy. If the, you know, housing prices went down like a couple $100,000, then of course I'll be buying properties, right? I'll be buying 2 or 3 rentals if that happened. So of course I always am looking at the market, but for now the plan is to retire at 31 with a 6-figure passive income coming in and live life on my own terms, be able to do what I want, where I want, with whomever I want to do it with. That is my goal.
There you go. I love it. Now, when you're placing these tenants, right, and you're renting out the rooms individually, right, how do you go about doing that?
So the great part is, first of all, it starts with the right targeting. So I look for professional students, usually people who are like pharmacy students, dental students, medical students, physical therapy students, basically students who are going to be focused on their studies because they have to get this high degree, right? So they have a lot of midterms and finals they have to be studying for. They're not going to have extra time to waste just partying it up and getting drunk and, you know, messing up the house, right? Yeah. So what I do is I look for college, one that has a lot of professional students at it. So I kind of target those types of students in my ads, or I look for them when I decide on a tenant to put into one of my properties. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things I do. In terms of screening, I do ask for, of course, last 2 month bank statements and FICO score, credit score, to kind of cover all my bases. But it's really not the student paying for the property. It's the parents who are paying for the property. So you're rarely ever going to have unpaid rent. I've never had unpaid rent from a parent because the parent is not going to not pay rent and risk their kid being evicted from the property, right? Yeah. So that's like the beauty of the model is the parents come in to help out, pay for the rent. And sometimes they even come over and help clean up the house because they want their kid to live in a nice, you know, house, right?
Read your bio before and you said that you give the tenants responsibilities. Is that correct?
That is true. Yeah. So that's part of the system, right? Give them specific responsibilities. Like I usually have someone who's in charge of paying the bills, like the utilities, the electric and gas, the trash, the water, right? And then what they do is they split out the bills among the other 4 tenants or the other 3 tenants of the house, right? And so I don't have to, you know, kind of keep track of all the utilities all the time if I'm able to do that. Another thing is like if there's a tenant who complains about another tenant, and that will definitely occur if you ever rent out per bedroom, you'll always get at some point, I would say, someone who complains about another person. It's not too often. I get it like once a year or so nowadays. So when that happens, the tenant who's complaining, of course, talk face to face with the other tenant. I empower them, right? You're an adult now. You know, this is something you have to solve face to face with the other guy. And if it still doesn't work out, then of course you can come back to me. Because one time I actually stepped in and said, hey, you know, the other guy's complaining about you. That just blew up. That got really bad because that other guy was saying, hey, you're talking behind my back now, right? You went behind my back, talked to the landlord, and I'm not happy about it. So the situation just got worse. So now I kind of work with tenant empowerment, you know, saying you're an adult now, take responsibility, right? And then we'll go from there.
Okay. And that's the only issue that you had with him?
I mean, I've had issues in the past, of course. I had one who... he smoked pot and then he got in trouble with the neighbors because he would play really loud music. This was actually the worst tenant I've ever had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he did all of that. I realized I didn't do my proper screening. He was actually one of my friends. And this is something kind of like a lesson I learned. A good friend isn't necessarily a good tenant, right? So he was actually one of my friends back in the day when I was a part of a fraternity. and he was part of my frat, and he was actually really young. He was kind of like a young sophomore when I put him into one of my houses. And so I actually knew he was kind of a party guy, and I didn't, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to do my bro, just, you know, kind of hook him up. Right. Then of course, you know, I ignored his personality. I ignored all the screening and all that. And I just put him in. And so that was a mistake. What I had to do for him, I actually had to contact his parent and say, hey, you know, your kid is smoking pot at the place, which was illegal at the time still in California. And he's also causing a lot of trouble with the neighbors, playing loud music. We actually had a cop come over and say, you know, this is not okay. You have to keep the noise level down and all that. So yeah, the parent basically straightened them out after that very quickly. So that's one thing you can resort to if, as a, like a last, you know, case ditch effort, right? If there are real big issues with having student tenants. But for the most part, you know, as long as I target the professional students and do the right screening, I don't have those issues.
And when you said you and you run advertisements for the tenants, where are you running advertisements?
I do Facebook groups, actually. So I post on the Facebook groups like off-campus housing, local housing, class of 2022. And usually the students will look on there and they'll just Facebook message me. And I just give them the rental application, you know.
So wait, you say class was 2022. So you're projecting that they're going to graduate in 2 years. So you're targeting like juniors, right?
Juniors, seniors, exactly. Yeah. So usually the third and fourth year students are more mature. They've had their partying, you know, they're all done with all that partying life, or maybe they're in professional school already. Right. Yeah. And they're looking to get their professional degree. And so they're focused on their studies.
Mm. How's your occupancy been thus far? Have you found that you struggled at all to fill your units, or you're fully occupied?
I'm almost fully occupied for next fall. So I advertise really early, around April or so. And because of the COVID-19 thing, there was some uncertainty about the fall semester, but my college opened up completely for students. They, of course, have social distancing measures. So I was a little bit worried about getting them all filled, but I currently have 17 tenants out of the full 18 spots filled for fall 2020 until fall 2021. Basically.
Mm-hmm. Are they all signing year-long leases, or do they sign 9-month
leases? Year-long leases, yes, exactly. So they have the option to sublease during the summer, during summer school time. But a lot of the professional students at my college, they have to take summer classes. So they're pretty much year-round anyways. So it kind of benefits them to do a one-year lease anyways.
Got it.
But I don't give them the option. I do a one-year lease for everyone. Because of the high demand, I have to kind of do that, right? And they always have that option to sublease during the summer, which generally speaking, it hasn't been an issue with finding tenants during the summer because there's always people taking summer classes that they can sublease to.
And then as far as you have your four single-family units now, you have your 17, 18-plus tenants. Are you doing anything as far as ongoing education is concerned right now? Are you going to your local meetups? Are you, you know, are you taking a course online? How are you going about educating yourself right now?
Yeah, so I read a lot of books. Obviously, Bigger Pockets is one of my favorite websites to go to. So I go on, read through the blogs and forums to see, you know, what else is out there, what other strategies are out there. I recently bought a book from David Green called the book on Burr.
Yep.
And yeah, just educating myself that way. So I do read a lot of books. I listen to podcasts like yours, obviously, to kind of educate myself. But yeah, those are some of the resources that I use.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, man, I really love your story. You know, I think, you know, being in real estate, you got to be creative in the first place. And, you know, if you're not a creative entrepreneur in real estate, you're probably not going to last very long as a real estate investor. So I think people that are listening to this have taken a lot of valuable information from your story and will continue to hopefully scale your portfolio. And we'll hear back from you in a couple of years that you have doubled your portfolio. So very cool.
I don't believe you have to, as a new investor, you don't have to be out there doing like hundreds of deals, right?
Sure.
If you have a strong system and strategy, you can just buy single family homes and rent out per bedroom and double your rental profit. And from this, I reinvested the cash flow. I even took out some equity from my first property to put on my fourth property. I was able to buy it sooner. And just by doing that, I was able to scale the four properties within 4 years, right? So
yeah,
you know, even as just a new investor, you don't have to be doing so many deals. You can just focus on getting started in single family investing.
Because I know David Green, he lives in California as well. And I believe he invests out of state. Is that correct? Right?
That's right. He does.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So are you looking at eventually to be investing in, you know, different markets outside of Northern California?
Well, the thing is, every time you do something like that, you do have to create another system in another state, right? You have to have a property manager, you have to have contractors in another state, you have to have, like, you know, agents, people sending you deals, right? So, and then of course you have to know the laws in the other state, right? So you might want to have an accountant who kind of knows what the tax laws are for the other state and all that. So you have to create that system. Eventually I will get into that potentially, but right now I'm able to self-manage my property on the side while I'm working my full-time job as a pharmacist. So This is a good deal. If it works, you know, why should I, you know, go chase some other model, right? Because I have a proven strategy. I just have to scale this strategy. I might be investing in other local cities, maybe like Elk Grove, which is close to me, which also has a pharmacy school. But I don't see a strong need for me to go straight into out-of-state investing at this moment, right? Mm. It involves quite a bit of, I guess, full-time work because you have to be there monitoring them, making sure the contractors get their work done on time because contract work tends to go over almost all the time, right? And plus costs run high for contracting as well for a lot of major projects. So just not being over there, I guess it's partly the, you know, maybe the fear of doing it, but also because it does require a lot more work on my part and I work a full-time job. So it doesn't make sense for me. I just rather scale the current model that working for me right
now. Yeah. I always tell people that like, there's a million different ways to work out, right? You can do P90X, you can do push-ups, you can run marathons, whatever, you can jump rope, right? But you never really know until you fully go and start doing it. And like, okay, I hate running marathons. I like walking and I like walking on Monday, Wednesday, Friday and doing yoga. Like you develop your own strategy. So, you know, a lot of people like we're traditionally in the multifamily space and, you know, people are like, oh, like scale, you know, get a multifamily. But what I like about your story is you kind of like this discovered your own process. You know, you're renting out the rooms, you're targeting college students, pharmacists, young professionals, 22 classes. So, you know, it's very creative, which I think a lot of people can take a lot of value from. So with that said, Ryan, I want to transition to the closing questions. First question I have for you is what is a pain point or weakness you face right now in your business?
I would say right now, I want to get into more systems-based. I mean, I do have the systems right now, but eventually I want it to be completely hands-off. So everyone kind of has a role and responsibility. And so I don't have to spend a lot of time managing the property. So most of the time I would say right now it's pretty hands-off, but I want to get more into that, of course, building those systems. But yeah.
For sure. All right. Second question is, what is your favorite book to gift?
Oh, I would say, of course, Rich Dad, Poor Dad at the beginning, but I would say another really great one out there is The Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller.
Okay. All right. I like it.
Yeah. It really goes into like the mindset behind real estate investing and building the right teams for it and what you'll actually need to get started.
Cool. Third question is, if you were to live abroad anywhere for 1 year, where would you live and why?
That's a great question. I would say Japan. I went to Japan last year. I love the culture there. Love the food, you know. So I would say that would be a great way.
And where'd you go? Zen
too. You know, I'm into meditation as well. So it's very Zen and I kind of have that spiritual nature as well that I love like Japan. To build. I went to Tokyo, Osaka, and Kyoto.
That's crazy. Yeah. My wife and I, we took our honeymoon there. It was my second time there when I went there, but we went to Osaka, Kyoto, and like Nara. We went to a small village outside Nara, like a
Oji.
Yeah, Oji. We stayed in a traditional style Japanese house, so out in the countryside, which is really cool. So
yeah.
I feel you. I feel you on Japan. I love Japan.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we did that too. We stayed in this traditional Japanese style house. It was great. Honestly, it was very relaxing. Food was awesome. So yeah, if you guys haven't been to Japan, highly recommend it.
Yeah. And so people that are listening to this, what's the best way to get a hold of you, get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I do have a really great resource for new investors trying to get started in real estate investing. And you could get that resource on my website. Just go to www.newbierealestateinvesting.com. That's www.newbierealestateinvesting.com. And newbie is spelled N-E-W-B-I-E.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ryan, for being on the show. I know we're going to take a lot of value from this, and we'll catch you on the next go round, my friend.
Oh, thanks again, Matt. I'm glad you invited me onto the show. I think our audience got a lot of value and hopefully inspiration from that story.
Likewise. Peace. Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I hope you guys got some tremendous value there from it. But if you guys are looking to take your real estate career to the next level and looking to partner with us on your next real estate deal, please head on over to www.matthewbaltzell.com and sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get our latest deal flows and our up-to-date real estate investing information, tidbits, and tips there for you. All right, guys, catch you on the next go around. Peace. Are you a busy real estate professional who's looking to build their authority online as a featured podcast guest but lacks the time to do so? Then head on over to elitepodcastbookings.com today to schedule a free consultation with the number one real estate podcast booking service, and you'll receive a limited time offer of 25% off.